Today, I'm joined by Bo Melita, an assistant public defender at the Albany Public Defenders. He's here to talk about COVID in the Albany County Jail and the bail reform rollbacks that were just passed in the New York State budget. Bo, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much for having me.
COVID-19 and your work in the jail, what does it look like these days?
So it's completely changed the landscape of my day-to-day work. My work normally is in a court. So, you know, I'm there in person with a judge and a prosecutor and my client litigating whatever issue happens to be going on. But, you know, for the last couple of weeks since this all kind of went down, we've been doing all Skype appearances in court, which is totally new and was not really done at all in criminal cases previously. So we've got a Skype center set up at the jail, a station for my client to appear at. I appear by Skype from my home. The prosecutor appears by Skype from their home, and the judge Skypes in from the court. And then we go forward on whatever proceeding happens to be going on.
I read a headline that maybe you were involved with, that they've released some people that were up for...
Yes, that's correct. There's a few categories of people that me and my office have been looking into to see if we can get them out of custody, given that first, there have been people that have tested positive at the jail for COVID-19, specifically corrections officer and a nurse who interacted with a lot of incarcerated people. As a result of that, they actually quarantined 35 inmates at the jail and separated them because of their interaction with these staff that had tested positive.
Does that mean like they go in the SHU or something, or isolation?
I believe they just were taken to a different area of the jail. So I don't think that they're taking a lot of different precautions at the jail as well. They're putting up plexiglass on the bars so that there's less airflow going on. They've increased the amount of cleaning that they're doing. But the fact is that jails are, there's a lot of writing about this right now. Jails are one of the most dangerous places that you can be when you've got a pandemic going on, because, you know, social distancing is not possible. And there is a lot of, you know, close contact between individuals that just, it's unique to jails and correctional facilities. So again, my office has been identifying a few different categories of people that we want to try to get out, given that, you know, the circumstances of incarceration have changed and have become, you know, dangerous to the life potentially of people that we represent that are either accused or convicted of crimes. So the first category is people that are just charged with crimes and have had bail set or are remanded to jail. So they're not convicted of anything, but they're sitting in jail on an accusation. And we have made bail applications. We've done, you know, a lot of litigation to try to get those people out. There's also people that are already serving a sentence. So let's say somebody got sentenced to 4 months in jail, and they've got a little bit of time left to serve on their sentence. You know, this last few days that they have in the jail, you know, how does that make a difference given the extreme increase to risk of health that they have being in that area? So you referenced, I believe earlier that I had done a case where someone had 6 days left to serve on their sentence. I contacted the DA's office. I said, can you agree to let this person out early, given that they only owe 6 days? And the DA's office, given the nature of the crime, and it was a relatively serious crime, they did not agree to do it. So I went straight to the judge and I said, judge, there's a lot of, you know, reasons why our position is that this person should be released and not have to serve this final 6 days, given that, again, the circumstances of their confinement are extremely risky. And the judge ended up granting that application, releasing that person 6 days early, and they were able to go back to their family, and they actually immediately began serving a period of probation.
Great. And we're seeing other cases around and other sort of decarceration events around COVID. But at the same time, just on Thursday, the New York State budget passed and the bail reform that had been in effect just for a short period of time since January of 2020, there are a bunch of rollbacks in terms of bail reform and discovery. Could you talk about what happened and explain it to us?
Absolutely. I was able to get a copy of the bill today. I don't think it's got the signature of the governor yet, but I think that there's a agreement in spirit, if you will. So I've been following it very closely. I've been reading some of the proposals to roll back pretrial release reform and discovery reform, and it was scary. You know, one of the most concerning proposals is the potential considering of dangerousness in determining whether someone should be released or sent to jail when they're accused of a crime but not yet convicted. Thankfully, that did not make its way into the proposal. But what did is a bunch of new crimes that are now eligible to have bail set on them and a couple other circumstances where a court can set bail. And there was another little section that I think is worth mentioning. The part of the law that talks about non-monetary conditions, which are, you know, conditions that a judge can set on somebody when they're accused of a crime, pretrial, that are not monetary, like bail, you know. So that means the person gets to remain released, but they can be supervised. And statistics have shown that these sorts of conditions of release are far more effective at protecting the community, decreasing crime, and making sure someone come back to court than setting bail on them and sending them to jail. There's decades of research in this area. But again, part of the law that relates to these non-monetary conditions was changed to alert judges to more options they have besides bail to make sure people come back to court. Like, for example, you got to get mental health treatment. You got to get drug treatment. You've got to stay away from people that have criminal records. So it had some options before, and really a judge has discretion to set any non-monetary condition that they want, so long as it's, you know, a constitutional one, a legal one. But the law added some things just to remind judges that there are other options besides setting bail. With regard to discovery rollbacks, there are extensions of the time periods the prosecutor has to turn over evidence under the initial criminal justice reform, discovery reform. The prosecutor had 15 days from arraignment, which is the first time that a person comes to court. And under the new law, those periods have been extended to 20 days if the person's in jail pretrial, 35 days if the person's not in jail. These time periods, which prosecutors, you know, pretty much uniformly responded by saying these time periods were too short. They didn't have time to obtain all the evidence, copy it, and turn it over. So these time periods are no longer going to apply to traffic tickets either, which was a pretty serious issue for local courts under the initial reform. The other big change in discovery rollbacks is that the prosecutor does not need to turn over the identity of 911 callers. So that, in theory, is going to put less disincentives in place for people to call the police if they are a witness to a crime or a victim. And also, the prosecutor doesn't need to turn over the identity of a victim or witness in Article 130 offenses. So those are sexual offenses. Or when the defendant has an affiliation with a criminal enterprise. So those are two situations where now the prosecutor will no longer have to turn over the identity of those people, except that a defendant can still ask a judge for an order that the prosecutor turn them over. And finally, discovery has, I was in favor of this all along, much more money. I think it was $40 million, if I'm correct, for DA's offices around the state to hire new staff and get new technology to help them comply with their obligations, which to me is eminently reasonable. It's a lot more conservative of a rollback than I was fearing. So I'm happy about that. What I'm concerned about is that there's going to be more people in jail during this COVID epidemic, which is not good for, you know, the health of my clients, but also the civilian staff at the jail, the public at large. If, you know, if and when people are released from jail, they can, you know, get other people sick if they got sick in the jail. So that's kind of a snapshot of what I was able to glean from the rollbacks that are going on right now.
Great. Thank you for going into that for us. I want to give you the last word here. What can you leave us with as an assistant public defender for the Albany Public Defenders in this time of COVID and your work?
I want to take an opportunity to point out that, you know, people that are supporters of progressive criminal justice reform, like myself, are not pro-crime, obviously. We're not pro-criminal. We are in favor of approaches to criminal justice that actually address the issues that caused crime to occur in the first place, in order to make sure that those crimes do not occur again or to decrease the risk of reoffense. So, you know, we're not looking to let everyone go free. There's just decades and decades of research that support pretrial release reform, discovery reform as mechanisms not only to ensure justice for people accused of crimes, potentially falsely sometimes, but even more importantly, to protect the community and to come up with solutions that will decrease crime in the community that I live in, that my family lives in, and that I care about very much.